News and information about living with sight loss. From InfoSound.
The National Sight Loss Charity Thomas Pocklington Trust has published a report called Experiences of Living with Visual Impairment, Matching Income with Needs, which was presented in a seminar at Westminster to highlight research findings that suggested that state-provided benefits are frequently insufficient to allow vision-impaired people to reach a minimum acceptable living standard, that typically vision-impaired people on low incomes focus on meeting their material needs but can find it harder to cover the costs of participating in society and living independent lives, and also that what the report describes as benefit cuts, including the introduction of universal credit, seriously undermine existing support for disabled people on low incomes. In response, the Department for Work and Pensions, which oversees the implementation of the benefit system, told us,
"We're committed to ensuring disabled people get the right support that they need. And that's why the Secretary of State recently announced that we will be protecting people who receive severe disability premium, SDP, by ensuring they keep this premium when we move them onto universal credit. And we will go even further by making additional payments to people on universal credit previously in receipt of SDP. In addition, personal independence payment can be claimed alongside universal credit and provides additional support for disabled people to lead independent lives."
We spoke to Catherine Hill from the Centre for Research on Social Policy at Loughborough University, which carried out the research. Catherine is lead author of the report, and she first told us a bit about the background to their findings.
Well, we've been doing research for Thomas Pocklington for the last few years, looking at the additional costs of living for people who are visually impaired and how this varies for people depending on if they're sight impaired or severely sight impaired, or if they're working age or pension age. And we found that, yes, there are additional costs of living which vary between 25 and 70% extra. And then once we've had those findings, then Thomas Pocklington Trust asked us to look at what does that mean in reality for people on a day-to-day basis. But it's not just about what people need to survive. It's more than that. It's about what people need to have the opportunities and choices necessary to participate in society, the extra costs, for example, of getting out and about, and also the extra additional costs specifically related to visual impairment, for example, equipment, that type of thing.
Did you look at the benefit assessment process, how those extra costs are or are not accurately assessed at the time that someone's benefit entitlement is being calculated?
What we did was some analysis to compare the additional costs that we found people said were needed with the amount of incomes that can be received through benefits, so through the extra cost benefits such as personal independence payment or disability living allowance and attendance allowance, as well as how that matches the basic means-tested benefits. And the key thing at the moment is there are also supplements that are triggered. So we were looking at how the costs compare to those.
So these practical everyday things that are costing extra, you talked about someone getting out and about and engaging with the local community, joining in with clubs, societies, using the library, post office, just kind of leading the life that many sighted people would just take for granted. Is mobility kind of at the core of that, paying for taxes, needing extra help, and indeed using perhaps extra equipment to help navigability when out there?
Yes, that is certainly part of it. When we did the interviews with people for the recent research, talking about their needs and how they meet them, yes, your basic costs were prioritised and generally covered, but it's these extra costs, so like social participation, so getting out and about, which can involve extra spending. So extra spending on taxis, for example, help to get out and about sometimes, and those types of costs can be more restricted if people are on a limited budget. And this is one of the areas where people said if they had a bit more money in their budget, yes, they would spend a bit more money on taxis, for example. It would help people be able to be more flexible and more spontaneous in their lives.
And is that one of the key messages that you got from people? You said you've talked to blind and partially sighted people about the costs, about their own particular budgets, what they spend their money on, where they would like to have more money to spend because of their vision impairment. Were there kind of any, if you like, standout things that everybody was saying? Were they all saying the same thing?
I think that was generally one of the things where people were agreed that, because particularly the research we were doing was with people who were living independently on their own. So there was an awareness of risk of isolation. So social participation was very important to people, but yet was one of the areas where if you had a bit less money, that was something that maybe had to give a little bit if you were prioritising your general needs. Another area was for equipment or technology, which, again, there were differences in how people met the needs there as well. And something that came out of the research was the importance of knowledge and networks and support and finding out about things. And I think there was a sort of message that once people find out about one thing or get networked into one thing, it can often lead to another. So, for example, if you're attending a social group for visually impaired people, that can often provide practical information and you can talk to other people. So, for example, an older person we spoke to was going to a group and then realised somebody was registered, but they weren't. That then spurred them on to get registered. This triggered then access to somebody who did a benefits check. It helped with getting attendance allowance and access to other services, which really made a huge difference to their lives. So I think the importance of registration is something that's a real big message that's come out as well for some people.
You've got this research together with examples. You've talked to lots of people. Where do you go with it now? What would you like to happen with this research?
The research has been given to the political parties and will help with Thomas Pocklington Trust and other organisations' campaigns to protect benefit levels when they are under threat. One example is with changes coming up under universal credit. The other aspect it's highlighted was the uncertainty that people who are working age benefits face when they have to go through reassessments. And that is something that I think sight loss organisations are campaigning and other disability organisations are campaigning on, because people need more certainty in their life, not insecurity.
And there's more information about Thomas Pocklington Trust's report, Experiences of Living with Visual Impairment, Matching Income with Needs, on the charity's website at www.pocklington, spelt pocklington-trust.org.uk.